Hey, amigos, you know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Welcome back, friend. It's May already, huh? May 2nd, International Harry Potter Day, where a grown-ass man can dress up like a wizard and wave his wand around in public. The only fun thing about that is you can pretend to cast spells and scare the shit out of them. Rapello Muggletum Scalus Prickus. Well, I'll be damned. Not bad. Anyway, come on in, friend. Let's make some magic happen in there, too. So check out SimplyScaryPodcast.com when you get a chance and become a patron. For as little as $7.99 a month, you can get the entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. Imperio, listeners, become a member today. I apologize for the dark magic there, friends. We're just trying to stay in the black this month. So tonight, we welcome back our good friend, Brian Asbury. This one's a psychological thriller of sorts, with what we literary types like to call an unreliable narrator. And if you've never heard the expression before, you'll know just what it means after this one. So, without further delay, from author Brian Asbury, I give you The Lunch Date. A young couple, Kyle and Shayla, sat eating together at Abu's Indian and Arab cuisine. They had acquired a taste for the food after Kyle began living next to the establishment several months earlier. They would sometimes get the lamb vindaloo, beef shawarma, or Kyle's personal favorite, tikka masala. But while the entrees were good, their buffet offered all these dishes and more, and in endless quantities. Kyle had built up a rapport with some of the restaurant staff, and although few words were uttered because of the language barrier, the servers were always more than welcoming. Up until today, that is. The restaurant had emptied out. It was nearly time for them to shut down for the afternoon, then reopen later in the evening for the dinner crowd. The waitress stopped in front of their booth, holding a pitcher of water in her hand. She smiled warmly.
"More water?"
she said in a Middle Eastern accent.
"I'm good,"
Kyle replied as he smiled back at her.
"Sure,"
Shayla said as she pushed her glass towards the edge of the table.
"We'll be closing soon."
Kyle leaned back and rubbed his stomach.
"I'm just gonna make one more trip through the buffet line. Then we'll be out of your hair."
After the waitress walked off, Shayla took a sip of her water.
"What we got to do after this?"
"I gotta take that scrap to the recyclers to get paid. Fucking Draco didn't come through with that shit, so I gotta figure something else out."
"Well, if all else fails, we could always just rob a bank. Kinda like Bonnie and Clyde,"
Shayla said, as if she almost romanticized the idea. Kyle grinned.
"Shit, don't tempt me. I'll tell you what I am gonna rob, though, some more of that food. This has to hold us over for the next few days."
Kyle got up from his booth and walked over to the buffet line. He piled up two more plates, causing some of the gravy to spill over the sides. He ran his finger around the edge of his dish, then raised it to his mouth and licked off the creamy excess. He sat back down at the table, then began rifling through his backpack. He pulled out several plastic Tupperware bowls and set them on the seat next to him. He looked around, and when the coast was clear, he began hastily spooning the food into the containers. After he finished, he grabbed his backpack and disappeared into the restroom. When he returned a short time later, he slid back into his seat, appearing somewhat jittery.
Suddenly, the music that had played through the overhead speakers turned off, and shouting could be heard coming from the kitchen. Kyle's eyes shifted towards the commotion. He rose to his feet and threw his backpack on.
"You ready?"
he said to Shayla. Shayla grabbed her purse and followed behind him as he staggered towards the door. Before they could leave, however, their waitress darted out from the back, blocking their path and startling them. She scowled vengefully as she pointed at Kyle's backpack and began shouting in Urdu. Kyle tried to force his way past her, but soon found himself being physically restrained. Two dark-skinned men, one of whom was dressed in a chef's uniform, pinned his arms behind his back. Shayla became confused and hysterical.
"What the fuck are you doing? Let him go!"
The waitress then grabbed Shayla's arm and attempted to yank her out of the restaurant. Another dark-skinned man, dressed in formal attire with salt-and-pepper hair, quickly stormed into view. He used his leg to prop open the door, then grabbed Shayla's other arm, and he, along with the waitress, tossed her into the parking lot. Kyle struggled in the men's grip.
"What the fuck is this?"
he howled. The man locked the glass door, then turned and faced Kyle as he straightened his dress shirt. He motioned towards the waitress.
"This is my wife," he said with a thick accent. "You know what she says? She called you a thief."
Shayla began banging on the door.
"What are you doing? Are you crazy or something?"
she shouted as she helplessly yanked on the handle. She looked around in a panic as the traffic on the street rushed by. The man with salt and pepper hair then uttered something in his native tongue. The men then forcefully stripped off Kyle's backpack and handed it to him. Shayla cupped her hands and peered through the window as she watched in disbelief. He unzipped the backpack and began digging through its contents. He pulled out the containers of food and carefully placed them on the counter as he glared over at Kyle.
"Look, I'm sorry. Me and my girlfriend were hungry, okay? Just let me go."
Without saying a word, the man motioned with his head, and the men began dragging Kyle through the dining room. His head was used as a battering ram to burst through the stainless steel doors that led into the kitchen. He was then dragged past the dish room and hot and cold storage units.
"Where the fuck are you taking me?"
Kyle shrieked. The men remained silent. They spoke little English, but regardless of that, his words were insignificant to them. They rounded a corner and came upon a wooden staircase which led to the basement. Once they approached the edge of the steps, they released Kyle from their grip and shoved him down the stairs. He tumbled face first and landed against a white, scuffed-up brick wall. He laid there dazed and motionless, yet still somehow conscious. He could hear the heavy thud of the men's feet getting louder as they marched down the stairs. They picked him up as blood ran from his broken nose. Much of the fight had now left his body. The downstairs was old and unfinished. It was lit by dim metal cage utility lights that gave the space a cold dungeon-like feel. Kyle's sneakers dragged across the concrete floor as the men lugged him past the boiler room. Soon, they approached a metal door.
"Vahan!"
the man with salt and pepper hair commanded. One of the men opened the door, which led into a food prep area. He flicked a wall switch and turned on the light, which flickered as if it were getting ready to burn out. There was a cooler in one corner and a large metal prep table in the other. They dragged Kyle through the doorway. The man with salt and pepper hair then entered carrying a wooden chair in his hand and placed it in the center of the room.
"Ise bandolo."
The men set Kyle down on the chair and proceeded to tie him up with rope. His left eye began to swell shut. A trail of blood ran from a laceration on his forehead. He grunted and fidgeted in his chair.
"Why are you doing this? What the fuck?"
The men stepped away, and the man with salt and pepper hair slowly advanced in Kyle's direction. He wore a look on his face that was hard as stone.
"You have a very foul mouth.
What do you want from me?"
"I want to teach you a lesson in humility. See,
What you did today not only violated the rules of this restaurant, but it also violated our religious law, the law of Sharia.
At that moment, Kyle could hear the slow shuffling footsteps of someone approaching the room. An elderly, slightly hunched over man then stepped into the doorway and rested against its frame. The two men quickly backed away and bowed their head in respect. The man with salt and pepper hair shifted his eyes toward the old man. He walked over to him, and the two began speaking amongst themselves. He then stepped aside, and the old man slowly lurched in Kyle's direction. Judging by his feeble build, he looked to be well into his hundreds. The flickering light played off his face and cast an unsettling shadow that exaggerated his decrepit features. He glared down at Kyle with disgust. Kyle gazed back at him with a look of dread etched on his face.
"My son, tell me you steal from us,"
he hissed with a raspy Middle Eastern accent. The veins in Kyle's temples swelled.
"Just let me go, man. I'm sorry. I'm fucking sorry, okay? Why are you doing this?"
The old man bent over and leaned in Kyle's direction. He sneered at him, which exposed his green and black teeth that poked out of his gums like crumbling headstones. He then raised his hand towards Kyle's face and slowly ran his finger up his cheek. When he got to his forehead, he grunted and then brutally dug his dirty, overgrown fingernail into Kyle's open wound. Kyle jerked his head and screamed in agony. The old man pulled his hand away and snickered morbidly to himself.
"Fuck you, man!"
The old man quit laughing and stood back up.
"I don't want to see your face anymore," he grumbled.
He then glanced over at the men, who watched from inside the doorway. He uttered something in Urdu, which caused the man dressed in the chef's uniform to storm out of the room. He returned several moments later, carrying a tan gunny sack in his hand. He opened it up and placed it over Kyle's head. Kyle screamed, but his cries were now muffled by the thick burlap material.
"Infidels are not meant to be heard,"
the old man said callously. The absence of his sight added yet another layer of terror to the unfolding nightmare that he found himself trapped in. Kyle, who was severely claustrophobic, began to hyperventilate. Suddenly, a nauseated feeling caused him to vomit up his lunch.
"You think that society owes your type something?"
the old man uttered. He began shaking his head.
"Well, let me tell you something, mister. We don't owe you nothing."
Chewed up bits of food and stomach fluid trickled down the front of Kyle's shirt. The old man scowled.
"I know that you are a bad person."
His eyes then narrowed to little black slits.
"I know about how you murdered that young girl and hid her body in a dumpster like she was a piece of trash."
Kyle was aghast.
"That girl's death was an accident. That wasn't my fault, okay?"
he pleaded as he squirmed in his seat.
"Who are you? How in the fuck did you know about that?"
"Today you pay for the crime of theft."
The old man looked up towards the ceiling and pointed.
"Allah will judge you for your other transgressions."
He then stared down at Kyle with eyes that burned like hot coals.
"And what awaits you beyond this life is far worse than any punishment that we could ever inflict."
His words were piercing and rang out like a dire prophecy, and Kyle, who was never a religious man, suddenly pondered the thought of eternal damnation.
"Iska haskadia,"
the old man said as he turned towards the men. They exited the room and returned a short time later. carrying in their arms an old wooden butcher's table. They placed it on the ground next to Kyle's chair. The man with salt and pepper hair then walked into the room, holding a meat cleaver in his hand as he rolled up his sleeves. Kyle sat terrified as he tried to gauge what was happening around him.
You came hungry and we fed you. Then you repay us by stealing from us and leaving syringes in the restroom. You dishonor yourself. And you dishonored this establishment.
The man with salt and pepper hair snarled.
I'm sorry. I have a problem, okay? I need help.
Kyle exclaimed as he tried to garner sympathy. The man then uttered something, and both men grabbed Kyle's arm and pinned his hand down on the table.
No, let me go! What the fuck?
He blurted out as he fought to free himself. The man with salt and pepper hair began to walk towards him as he carefully ran his finger up the meat cleaver's razor-sharp blade. He stopped next to Kyle and paused as he glared down at him. You could see his chest rise and fall as he breathed. Suddenly, he looked up towards the ceiling.
Allahu Akbar!
He shouted at the top of his lungs. Then he looked down and gazed at Kyle maniacally. He cocked back his arm and with a single forceful blow, chopped off Kyle's hand with the meat cleaver. Ah! Kyle wailed in agony as his mutilated hand rolled onto the ground. The men then released his arm as blood pumped out of his severed limb like a crimson fountain.
Now go. Go and die like a dog in the street.
The old man hissed mercilessly. Following his cue, one of the men then pulled out a knife that was attached to his belt. He approached Kyle from behind and began to cut him free. The rope finally tore and fell to the ground. Kyle rose to his feet and pulled the gunny sack off his head, his face pale and grimacing. He gazed down in horror at his missing hand as the men all looked on, stony-eyed. He then staggered forward as blood began to pool on the ground next to him and stained the air with an iron stench. He stumbled through the basement, bracing himself against the wall as he eyed the staircase off in the distance. His legs grew heavier with each step. When he finally reached the stairs, he rested against the wall and peered up towards the top dauntingly. He then grabbed onto the railing and began to drag himself up the steps. When he reached the top, he turned and saw the exit door. He hit the crash bar and fell onto the ground outside in the alley. He rolled around in a daze, then got onto his knees and began to crawl towards the street. He grunted in agony.
Help! Help me!
His dying cries reverberated. Suddenly, off in the distance, he caught a glimpse of what looked like Shayla rushing by on the sidewalk between the two buildings.
Shayla!
He shrieked, but she had already scurried by. He continued crawling, then slowly rounded the corner as he made his way to the front of the restaurant. He prayed that he would see Shayla somewhere nearby. He raised his bloody nub off the ground, which was now caked with rocks and dirt, then shielded his face from the sun, but to his dismay, Shayla was nowhere in sight. He took one last breath, then collapsed onto the ground. Abu Freshi, the man with salt and pepper hair, stood frightened and holding a butcher's knife as he peered out of the window of his restaurant. His face was still splattered with droplets of Kyle's blood. He breathed a sigh of relief when he saw a police cruiser speed into the parking lot. He set the knife down, then unlocked the front door and waved towards the officers.
Thank God you are here,
he said in a distressed tone.
Is everyone in there all right?
Officer McDaniel exclaimed as he rushed towards the door. His hand rested tactically against his sidearm.
Yes,
Abu answered as a tear ran from his eye.
And by the grace of Allah.
In the office area, his wife Halima attended to his elderly father, who sipped on a glass of water. The man in the chef's outfit, along with his brother, who was a server, sat at a table in the dining room. They were both covered in blood and wore a look of trauma on their faces. A white sheet that covered Kyle's body gently fluttered in the breeze. Police worked to rope off the restaurant's perimeter, which was now treated as a crime scene. Detective Holland sat at a booth next to Abu as he tried to piece together what had unfolded that afternoon.
"Okay, Mr. Frazee. Just so you are aware, you are being recorded," the detective said as he sat his phone down on the table. "So what events led up to your wife calling the police today?"
Abu frowned.
"First of all, I want you to know that this is very difficult for me to discuss. We knew that man. He lived in the alley next to the restaurant. Sometimes he would beg for food and we would feed him."
"So he was homeless?" the detective asked.
"Yes. He seemed to be a bit unstable mentally, but for the most part, harmless."
As Abu kept speaking, the truth began to reveal itself, and it was entirely different than the deranged scenario that Kyle had imagined in his troubled mind. It was a frigid fall afternoon, and Abu and his wife had allowed Kyle to come inside the restaurant to warm up. Once inside, he was offered food from the buffet. He sat alone in a corner booth where he mumbled incoherently, as if he were speaking to someone who was sitting across from him. That someone was Shayla Baker, a 19-year-old homeless woman who he had briefly dated. She had died 2 years earlier after Kyle had strangled her and then disposed of her body inside of a dumpster. He was a paranoid schizophrenic and a heavy drug user. He had scored some PCP earlier in the day and began shooting up in their restroom. Abu's wife had discovered the used syringes that were littered on the restroom floor and became upset. When she confronted Kyle, he became argumentative and refused to leave. Abu heard the shouting and quickly rushed to his wife's aid. He was soon joined by the other two men, and together they tossed Kyle out of the restaurant.
"I should have called the police at that moment, but I never expected the situation to escalate like it did,"
Abu said to the detective. "So, did the perpetrator leave after that?"
"We watched him from the window. He was throwing his arms in the air and yelling and cursing in the parking lot, like someone was attacking him."
"Were there any other customers around who may have witnessed this?"
Abu shook his head.
"No. The restaurant was empty. We had just closed."
"Do you have any surveillance footage?"
"Yes, we have cameras throughout the restaurant."
"That's good. Did you happen to notice where the perpetrator went after he left?"
"No, we eventually lost track of him. We figured maybe he moved on."
But Kyle didn't move on. Instead, he waited, lurking in the shadows and high on PCP. A few hours later, Fahad, the man who was the server, peeked his head out the side door and scanned the alley. With no sign of Kyle, he grabbed a few bags of trash and began walking towards the dumpster. He took a few steps when a rat suddenly scurried by, startling him. He stumbled backwards, then paused and took a deep breath. He looked around somewhat anxiously, then continued on his path towards the dumpster.
"Hey!"
a menacing voice suddenly called out from within the darkness. Fahad jumped, then froze in consternation. Kyle then stepped out from hiding behind a light pole. He had stripped off all of his clothes after the voices had told him to get undressed. Fahad's eyes gaped open in terror. He dropped the trash bags and began to back away. Kyle's brow furrowed and his eyes darkened.
"Why do you keep hurting me?"
he roared as he walked in Fahad's direction. Fahad turned back towards the door and took off in a sprint. Kyle then bolted after him. Samir, the man who was dressed in the chef's uniform, was dicing vegetables when Fahad suddenly burst through the door. Fahad exclaimed in a panic. He frantically dug through his pocket as he reached for his keys, but before he could lock the door, Kyle began trying to force his way into the restaurant. Samir threw his knife down and began shouting as he darted towards the door. Kyle managed to knock Fahad back far enough to slip his hand through the opening. It flailed around wildly and grabbed at the air. Samir began pushing on the door with all his might as he and Fahad fought to barricade it shut. Abu suddenly burst into the kitchen after hearing the commotion. He began assisting the two men and shouted for his wife to call the police. Abu shook his head despairingly as he recalled the event.
It was like he was a demon or something. It took everything we had to hold him back, he said to the detective. So at what point did you decide to sever the perpetrator's hand?
Abu grimaced. Detective Holland gestured to him.
It's okay if you need to take a minute. I know that you have all been through a lot today.
Abu lowered his head and rubbed his face distraughtly. He then looked back up as his bloodshot eyes welled up with tears.
When I look at my wife and father, I knew I had to protect them.
Abu's elderly father wandered into the kitchen and began trying to help. Halima hovered nearby, unsure of what to do as she spoke on the phone to 911.
Grab me the meat cleaver,
Abu barked. She grabbed the giant meat cleaver off the magnetic knife strip that was attached to the wall and handed it to him. Kyle's fiendish cries continued to resonate through the alley. With his superhuman strength and no perception of pain, he was now able to push his body to man's true limits. Each time that he flung himself against the door, the men were knocked backwards. Abu raised the meat cleaver over his head, then gritted his teeth and began violently hacking at Kyle's wrist.
I was stunned. I thought that maybe after the initial blow, he would have left, but it was like it didn't faze him,
Abu said in a baffled tone.
His hand was barely hanging on by a few strands at that point, and yet he just kept coming.
The detective shook his head.
Unfortunately, it's not uncommon for people who are high on narcotics to feel invincible or be desensitized to pain. At what point did he finally retreat?
After I finally cut his hand off.
Kyle's mutilated hand fell onto the floor, his fingers still twitching. Fahad kicked the hand out into the alley, and the men were finally able to slam the door shut.
After that, we locked the door and grabbed weapons in case he tried to get back in. Then a little while later, the police arrived.
I don't know if you saw it or not, but the perpetrator passed away right outside your building. So we're having to treat this as a homicide.
Abu nodded grimly.
I understand.
Did you have anything else that you'd like to add?
The detective asked. Abu shook his head.
No.
The detective then grabbed his phone off the table and got to his feet.
Thank you for your statement, and I'm sorry for what you and your family had to go through today.
Thank you,
Abu replied.
I just need to interview the other individuals who were involved, and then I'll be finished here.
After Detective Holland walked away, Abu remained seated at the booth, staring vacantly into the distance. A few minutes later, he stepped into the restroom to wash up. He turned on the light, then glanced at himself in the mirror. He dispensed some soap into his hand, then worked it into a lather as he bent over and began washing his face in the sink. He grabbed a paper towel off the counter and patted his face dry. To his horror, when he opened his eyes and looked back into the mirror, he suddenly saw Kyle standing behind him. He scratched at pick marks on his skin, and blood spurted from his severed hand. Abu spun around in a panic, but there was no one standing behind him. He began hyperventilating as he looked around in confusion. He then fell back against the wall and clutched his chest. He looked as though he had almost seen a ghost. And that was The Lunch Date by our pal Brian Asbury. A good reminder that no good deed goes unpunished. So always be sure to have a cleaver handy. No pun intended. A little about the author. My amigo Brian Asbury is originally from Pueblo, Colorado. He's a big fan of television shows like Tales from the Crypt and The Twilight Zone. He also enjoys gritty 90s psychological thrillers like Cape Fear and Unlawful Entry. He's a regular contributor for CTFDN, Drew Blood's Dark Tales in particular. And if you enjoyed this story, you can check out many of his other ones available on the network. His collection Waking the Dead is available from the Evil Cookie Publishing, and in audio as a collaboration with Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, featuring myself and other voices from the network. Fans can connect with him on Facebook under Brian Asbury, writer. He'd like to thank his lovely wife Amber, who has been one of his biggest inspirations, and also his family and friends. You know who you are. Hey, thanks, Brian. Always a pleasure, my friend.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till next time. Chester and I will be waiting for you over at the Crimson Hour tomorrow night. Come on by and say hi, but leave your wizard shit at home. Unless you've got a spell to get rid of Clarence, of course. Meanwhile, grab yourself a drink for the road. And while you're out there, may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Hey, I'll see you all tomorrow night at the Weekend Abode. And until then, friends, go fuck yourselves. Good night, y'all.
Come on, Chester. Let's go wave our wands at some ladies. What do you say?